News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
49 days to go until Election Day, and if you're not keeping count, come on, aren't you glad we are?
Yes, we are.
On today's show, it's been called the MAGA blueprint for remaking the federal government, and it has become a lightning rod for debate and controversy on the campaign trail. It's Project 2025, and we're talking with the organization that created it. But first, let's take a quick sprint around the political world.
Donald Trump holding his first campaign rally since the second assassination attempt against him was foiled. The former president's going to be in the crucial swing state of Michigan, holding a town hall-style event in Flint. Meanwhile, multiple investigations into Sunday's incident at Trump's golf course in West Palm Beach, they are just getting underway as the Secret Service looks to ramp up protection procedures around the candidate.
The Biden administration's deputy attorney general said today that the Justice Department is fielding an alarming surge of violent threats against public officials and election workers. The risks for poll workers and state and local election officials is said to be particularly troubling, with increasing fears that violent acts might be carried out on Election Day itself.
Vice President Kamala Harris had what was reported as a tense meeting with leadership from the Teamsters Union, emerging without an endorsement from the labor organization representing some 1.3 million workers. While Harris has received endorsements from just about every major labor union in the country, Sean O'Brien and his Teamsters, they've been holding out. If an endorsement does come, it could happen as soon as tomorrow.
It is a 900-page wish list for the next Republican president of the United States, with plans for remaking the entire federal bureaucracy in a far more conservative light and tearing down much of what's called the administrative state. But Project 2025, from the right-wing think tank, the Heritage Foundation, it doesn't stop there. It is a conservative reimagination of American life, from immigration to abortion to LGBTQ rights. So that's the focus for today's Countdown 2024. We're talking with Ryan Walker. He's the Executive Vice President of Heritage Action. That's the lobbying and advocacy arm of the Heritage Foundation. Ryan, tell us a little bit first how you view Project 2025. What, in your view, is it?
Yeah, great question. So Project 25 is an effort that was stood up by the conservative movement, generally speaking. Over 110 organizations have been brought together to put together their thoughts on advocacy, on policy solutions that meet the moment for the American people. This was started before, I think there were, certainly before President Trump entered the race and declared himself a candidate. And we've offered briefings to all candidates across the political spectrum, across the board. So we view this effort as our attempt to try and showcase conservative policy solutions to the trials and tribulations that the American people face every day. And lastly, this is an effort that the Heritage Foundation has taken on since the 80s. We have delivered a prescription of policy solutions that we think would right the country in the right direction since the Reagan administration. So this is an effort that we put together every presidential cycle.
You know, Ryan, I wonder your thoughts on this. The president of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, has said, and this is a quote, "We are in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be." I mean, that to me sounds like a threat. What is your take on that, and why shouldn't Americans be alarmed by that?
I think it was taken, you know, sort of out of context in a broader theme that Dr. Roberts was trying to convey. I think that campaigns are looking for any and all controversial statements that can, in their view, guide the election or change the tide. We've seen the two leading candidates, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, essentially tied in a number of states, including very important battleground states. And so I think folks are looking for any and all opportunities to shift the direction of the country. And that's sort of my view.
Right, but he says bloodless. I mean, why use those words?
Well, I think he's speaking to a frustration from the American people, from a citizenry that feels like their government has not been addressing the issues, the problems that they're dealing with on a daily basis. And so I think that that was coming out in those remarks is a frustration that he feels comes from the American people. We travel all across the country and interact with folks all across the United States. And so I think that he was simply trying to reflect that.
Okay, let's talk about some of the things that are actually in this 900-page document. I'll just tick off a few, right? So it proposes things like placing most of the federal bureaucracy, including the Department of Justice, under direct presidential control. It advocates eliminating job protection for thousands of federal workers. It advocates the withdrawal of the abortion pill from the market. It advocates more funding for a U.S.-Mexico border wall. It advocates slashing money for research and investment in renewable energy. And a quote from the document, stop the war on oil and natural gas. Excuse the pun, and it's not meant, but these do seem rather radical from a right-wing organization.
Well, I don't think they're radical at all. In fact, I think the American people expect their government to secure their southern border, to establish sovereignty within our own lands, to protect and make sure that our own communities are safe. I think that what we've seen happen due to the flood and open southern border into the United States is rampant crime, crime that would not have otherwise happened. And I think the American people have the perspective that if they can prevent crime from happening by having a secure southern border and preventing illegal immigrants from coming into the country unfettered and undocumented and without background checks or anything of the sort, I think that the American people would support that. And we're seeing that in real time as they advocate for the Congress to consider things like the SAVE Act, which would prevent illegal immigrants from voting in federal elections, or would at least require them to present their citizenship documents prior to their registration.
Okay, but Ryan, what about withdrawing the abortion pill from the market? The polls are all showing that the majority of Americans, despite the recent Supreme Court ruling, are in favor of abortion, at least up until a specific point. And in state after state, or at least most of the states that have thus far had elections or votes on the abortion issue, people have so far voted in favor. So what about the idea of withdrawing the abortion pill from the market?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we are a pro-life organization. We have been for decades, right? And so we advocate for those positions to protect life. And without getting too much into the background of the mifepristone abortion pill, there is conversation about the legality of what happened and how it was approved by the FDA. And I think that the team that put together the comments on that are sort of reflecting that conversation that's happening around it. And so, again, we're a conservative pro-life organization and have been for quite some time, and we aren't going to rest on our laurels and simply not discuss that issue.
Right. And this document is also very, you know, pro-life, pro-family, married, mothers, fathers, children. Obviously, there are other segments of the population that do not fit into that little box. Part of this document, even just in the foreword, talks about the next conservative president must make the institutions of American civil society hard targets for woke culture warriors. And it goes on to say that this starts by deleting the terms sexual orientation and gender identity, diversity, equity, inclusion, going on and on and on, out of every federal rule, agency regulation, contract, grant, regulation, and piece of legislation that exists. I myself am a lesbian American, married, been with my partner for almost 20 years. How do you explain that to someone like me?
Well, listen, I think that we are a country built on merit and the value of someone's work contributing to whether they should be considered for or not considered for a job or position. And that is what we are advocating for. We don't believe that just because of someone's belief system or the color of their skin or their country of origin, that they should have some natural advantage over everyone else. It should be an equal playing field that allows for anyone that has worked hard and diligently dedicated themselves to their career to be able to advance. And that's sort of the grander narrative that we're trying to address there.
So when the document itself, and I hate to keep calling it a document, it's too big for a document, but I guess it's kind of like a book at 900 pages. But when it says of the Department of Health and Human Services that it needs to maintain a biblically based social science reinforced definition of marriage and family. So what of the notion of separation of church and state? Why biblically based?
I think that what we're talking about there is the United States is experiencing a lack of family formation, and our birth rate has come down. As a nation, if we are going to continue the society that we have built in this country, we have to address those issues. And this is our attempt to showcase policy solutions that might get us in that direction, to encourage family formation. As we all know, families around the country, individuals around the country are dealing with a litany of issues that prevent them from forming a family. And so we are adamantly and trying to aggressively promote that, because we understand that America is, yes, we are a melting pot that brings in a lot of cultures, and we have been since our founding. But we have also established an American culture, and we want to encourage that to continue. And that starts with family formation and encouraging or creating the environment so that families can have children and feel like they are thriving and being able to advance.
All right, Ryan Walker, Executive Vice President of Heritage Action. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Thanks for sticking with us. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. We are making Project 2025 the focus of today's Countdown 2024 show, and we are talking with the architects of the blueprint for a second Trump administration.
Ryan Walker is sticking with us. He's Executive Vice President of Heritage Action. That's the lobbying and advocacy arm of the Heritage Foundation. That's the authors, really, of Project 2025.
I want to bring back the discussion that we were kind of just talking about here with regard to health and human services and, you know, wanting to lift up the nuclear family, ultimately, right? That's what you guys are looking to do with this document and really make that a pillar of Project 2025. And certainly, should we get a conservative president in 2025, that would be something that you would want from that president. Not to make this a personal thing, but, there is a segment of the society, the LGBTQ community, who obtained their rights to the right to marriage. Is that something that could be under attack under this proposal?
No, the legal recognition of same-sex marriage is not discussed in Project 25, the mandate for leadership, or any of the documents or the material related to Project 25. We do not mention it in that document.
Are you, or is the Heritage Foundation disappointed that Mr. Trump hasn't certainly disavowed Project 2025, but when he's been asked about it repeatedly, he has said things like he knew nothing about the project, that he had no idea who is behind it, and of course, as you know, more than several people who were attached to the Trump administration, Paul Danz is one, who was the chief of staff in the Office of Personnel Management, Russell Vought, who was the Trump official and now Republican National Committee Platform Policy Director, to name just two. Is there disappointment at the Heritage Foundation that Trump seems to be trying to distance himself from it?
No, not at all. We have never pretended to speak for President Trump. He was not a part of us putting together this project. He did not contribute to any of the policy items that are contained within the mandate for leadership. Again, we published this book well in advance of President Trump announcing his candidacy. And we've done this, again, since the Reagan administration. And we're very proud of the policy recommendations and how much of our policy recommendations since the time that we started publishing the mandate for leadership, how many of those recommendations have been taken up and ultimately signed into law or effectuated through the White House into practice. So we're very proud of that. But no, we aren't disappointed at all.
I mean, back in 1981, you guys had the first, well, Heritage Foundation had the first mandate for leadership that came out, right? It was published, and by the end of the first year of Reagan's presidency, more than 60% of its recommendations had become policy. Would you say that's the same expectation should Donald Trump be elected again, that at least that much would be implemented?
Well, again, we don't speak for President Trump or a future potential Trump administration, but we would hope that his administration would implement a lot of our ideas. I think that you mentioned energy at some point earlier in the interview and our recommendations on the energy front. I think the American population agrees with the idea that America should use the resources that we have at our disposal to create a natural advantage for individuals and corporations and small businesses throughout the country to have access to cheap energy to be able to produce and grow and innovate and become entrepreneurs. So we fully expect a number of these recommendations that we believe are completely reasonable and supported by a majority of the American people to be implemented. Of course we do.
Do you think then that this whole Project 2025 thing has been misinterpreted by some, perhaps by media? And if so, how?
Yeah, well, I think it's been lied about. I know, in fact, that multiple media organizations have had to issue retractions. They have had to issue corrections. They've been fact checked, on many of the claims. In fact, some of the candidates at the DNC were standing on stage outright lying about what is in the book, despite the fact that you can access that document and read through it yourself. Although, most people don't want to because it's 900 pages and that would take quite a bit of time. In short, I think it's been lied about by a number of folks in the media. And it has been those lies have unfortunately spread around the country.
Ryan Walker, again, Executive Vice President of Heritage Action. We're talking about Project 2025. Got to take another break. We'll be right back.
And thanks for sticking with us on Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
We are talking about Project 2025 from the Heritage Foundation. The focus of today's show, Ryan Walker, Executive Vice President of Heritage Action, the lobbying and advocacy operation of Heritage Foundation. He remains with us for some closing thoughts.
You know, we've been talking about this 900-page document, and I think you're right that most people have not had the time to read it because it is quite voluminous. Has there been some thought about perhaps shrinking it considerably in size, and perhaps that would lead to a better understanding? Because at its current length, perhaps that's part of the problem.
Unfortunately, the size and scope of the federal government creates the necessity for us to publish a 900-page plus book. There are so many agencies and bureaucracies within the federal government that we legitimately have to work through and publish policy solutions for and suggestions for I think it does need to be 900 pages. And we're an academic research institution that studies, analyzes, and researches these topics every day, year in and year out. And so this is a cobbling together of over 100 conservative organizations. And I'll note here, too, within the book, there are competing views on a number of these issues that even within the conservative movement, there is not complete and total unanimity on. So this idea that it is a prescription that must be adhered to and it's etched in stone is just simply false. But unfortunately, the size and scope of the federal government require us to publish a book of this size to tackle serious issues that the American people deal with every single day.
Ryan, I want to circle back to the issue of abortion, because obviously that is a big deal to a lot of people here in the United States. The idea of like data collection, it talks about the CDC's abortion surveillance and maternity mortality reporting systems are woefully inadequate, and kind of goes along saying that because liberal states have now become sanctuaries for abortion tourism, HHS should use every available tool, including the cutting of funds, to ensure that every state reports exactly how many abortions take place within its borders, at what gestational age of the child, for what reason, the mother's state of residence, and by what method. Why does the government need that information?
Well, I think that on the abortion question, I think that there are legitimate concerns around the country about when and how those procedures are taking place. There are a number of states around the country, despite the false fact check of the moderators during the debate that allow for abortions, late term abortions. And so I think that the sentiment there is that HHS needs to have an awareness of how states are behaving and how this practice is being conducted in states where it is now legal to do those kinds of things. And the American people, as we've seen in polling and anecdotal responses, they have a reversion to the idea that someone can go into an abortion clinic and get a late-term abortion in the 8th month of the pregnancy, all based on the criteria that the child may have Down syndrome or may have an issue with their DNA. These types of practices are allowed throughout the country. So I think it's a sentiment towards that to make sure that those practices are being monitored. And again, HHS and the federal government has an idea of how states are conducting them.
Okay. Ryan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, Ryan.
And on tomorrow's edition of Countdown 2024, it is the economy.